you ready to get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today we have returning guest Mike Beatty, and we cover a range of things around him taking his site full-time very soon as he heads back home. And we dive into the area of how he's managed to make basically most of his income through affiliate. So we dive into how he's writing his affiliate articles, how he's researching them, how he's managed to hire a great team and his processes around that. And then we just go into all the other general questions around his affiliate niche website. So if you're looking to go full-time or you are full-time right now with your site, this will be a wonderful resource for you as you start to pick out certain things that he's doing that you can implement into your own site. So sit back and enjoy.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
All right. Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today we have Mike. Is it Beatty?
Yeah.
Mike Beatty or Beatty? Yeah, Beatty. I got it right first time. Perfect. Welcome, Mike. It's great to have you on here. You were well recommended. Our other podcast host who hasn't hosted a podcast in a long, long time. I should actually hit him up and see if he can give me a break for a week. But welcome on. And do you want to maybe give a brief background about yourself and kind of what you're up to in the space?
Sure. Yeah. No. Thanks for having me on. I did actually come on once with him before. So
I realized that. Yeah.
Once before, but quick background. Just I'm an international teacher, so I've been in Qatar for the last like 8 years or so. Moving back at the end of this year, moving back to the UK, and just kind of stumbled into the online space in maybe 2018 it would have been, and yeah, it's just opened my eyes to the potential. Was like this hidden world within our existing world. So
yeah,
it's amazing that when you get into this space, how many people you actually end up meeting that you sort of already half know, that do a little bit of it on the side and things like that. And like, everyone's interested in this stuff. So
yeah.
So yeah, no, that's kind of quick overview. And then also I've had a couple of sites before. My main site now is like in the sports space. It's did over six figures last year, and that's profit as well. So not just the revenue.
Nice.
So.
I didn't realize you were in Qatar. My wife and I actually had our honeymoon in Doha.
What?
Yeah, well, 4 years ago. Yeah. Four years ago. Well, we ended up getting married in South Africa, got married back in New Zealand, and then she had like an international competition in Doha. So we just doubled that up as the honeymoon. So we basically right after, I think it was Boxing Day, the competition was. Before Christmas. Then we just did Christmas and honeymoon through that period in Doha.
What did she do? What was she doing over there?
Olympic weightlifting.
Nice.
Yeah, that was for the Olympic qualification back then. That was a little while ago now. But
wow.
Yeah, so we ended up honeymooning there and being on the beach and stuff at the
the hotel, so that was nice.
Nice. Yeah, no, it's good for that sort of thing. It's never been on the map until the World Cup, and now like apparently okay, now it's advertised everywhere. Everyone keeps saying about it, so
yeah, the place to be.
Yeah,
the place to be. Well, let's dive into your site then. So you said you've had a couple of sites.
Yeah.
Previously, did you sell those off? Did you?
No, not really. They just kind of fizzled out. But I kind of started with Pinterest marketing. So I don't know if you remember, but it was a little time where Pinterest was like amazing at just getting traffic. And so I just had like a site in, it was to do with yoga, and I kind of hit on keto a bit just because I was just seeing what was working for other people and just kind of copied what other people were doing. I didn't really understand anything about anything at that stage. So I was just reading random blogs and just doing all that sort of stuff. So, but then it was, I don't know when it was, sometime in 2018 or 2019, like it got taken over like as a business. And so the whole free traffic that you could kind of get from there just kind of dried up, and it just became a lot more like pay to play. It's still very good, I think, if you've got a visual niche or something, you know, arty and crafts and lots of other spaces as well, to be fair. There's lots of other things that you can do pretty well on Pinterest, but it definitely depends on the niche. It's not as straightforward as just, you know, like anyone can do well on Pinterest, which kind of then it was a bit more like that. I still think most niches probably could do quite well on Pinterest if you understand it. But I mean, I haven't used it properly for a few years now, so it's probably changed tons since when I was doing it. So anyway, that just kind of wiped the traffic when that all happened, and it was just getting like a little bit of money from display ads before that. I had plans to sort of create a course and do all this other stuff, but the traffic just kind of got demolished from when that all happened. So I had another site which was just more focused on SEO, and I just realized how much more stable it was. Obviously until the last couple of years where everyone, that's kind of changed a ton as well. But I mean, it's always been changing. But it 100% is way more stable. It's just much more reliable. You know roughly what's going to happen each month. Obviously this time in a year could be totally different, but that just kind of led me down a rabbit hole of SEO and all that sort of stuff.
Is Pinterest something you'll look to do on your current site? Because you mentioned you're in the sports niche. I know your site.
Yeah.
There's probably a good one to do it on. Is there something you look to diversify into?
Yeah, I mean, there's about a million things that I'd love to do. And so it's definitely on the list. But I think in this next year or so, once we move back to the UK, I'll have a lot more time and things like that. And so there's so many more other plans. YouTube's one of them. I had a quick chat with you about that already. There's just a lot of other things that I would like to do in more of a community, and Pinterest is definitely part of that. You can definitely outsource it and set it up in a way relatively cheaply, and just kind of let it run on its side thing. And if you're already creating the images and visuals, then it's not really too much extra work. Again, like when I was doing it before, you could definitely putting like a text overlay and things like that was really important. But like I said, I haven't done it for so long. I'd have to touch up on what is like the current trend and what works and what doesn't work.
Are you going to be working full time when you head back to the UK then?
No, well, just going all in with this really. It's just,
nice.
Yeah. It's required a lot more time, than what I'm giving it at the minute. And I think it could have just been so much better this year if I just made that leap last year or another stage. But there's just obviously life and things happen, and there's certain things that have prevented that from happening. So we're just really looking forward to it. I'm particularly looking forward to getting back anyway.
Nice. So is the site currently making enough for you to live off? Are you able to share some numbers on the site?
Yeah. So I think it did, what were you now, 2023? So 2022, it was about $180,000 revenue, and then maybe like 130 profit. So probably spent about 50. And that was like ramped up. It wasn't like, it was always making profit. It's always, and it's, you know, still does make profit. So it's kind of one of those things where you just kind of figuring out, you know, as you're scaling. And I've read like Profit First before, which is a great book of like setting up your business and just good for personal finance and stuff in general. So it's always just trying to make sure the expense is never out, you know, because especially with a Google hit, it can just change things so quickly. And so I've actually been quite fortunate because it did get hit in December, but I sort of still had control of the expenses. And so it hasn't really changed too much. I just stopped scaling as much as we were, which is not necessarily a bad thing, because again, it just brings back that quality control and focusing on quality and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah.
Nice. So how was it monetized then? How are you bringing in a lot of that revenue?
It's mainly affiliate, very heavily affiliate. And then there are display ads on there as well, but I mean, it makes hardly anything. It's like maybe $1,000 a month or something from that. So it's not a huge amount from that. But then that's the big plan at the minute. And a lot of the work behind the scenes is going into sort of figuring out what courses and stuff would suit the audience and what products and what things we can do to diversify, just make it what I would call like a real business rather than just relying on the SEO and affiliate. So it's a good,
you've got heaps you can go into as well, like for digital products. Like, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Endless things you can sell on that. Like,
yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. So much opportunity. But you talked about affiliate. Is it, you're making a shit ton. It's not just from Amazon, is it? Or is it private affiliate program?
No, I've just tried to move off Amazon as much as possible. It's, like as everyone knows, you just don't want to be on Amazon. So yeah, I mean, particularly at the start, it probably was heavier with Amazon, but then it's one of those things that when you start ranking and you're seeing what traffic's coming in, it's then like, well, why don't we just double down? So there isn't a huge amount of articles on the whole site. I mean, there's probably like 150 or something like that. So currently.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it's just really focusing on what has worked and then try and make it better and try and improve it and try and improve conversions and things like that. I've spoke to some people and they're like, you know, is it RPM, you know, like your revenue per thousand is pretty crazy on the site. And it's just more, just figure out what is working and then doubling down on that and just making it better rather than always just trying to pump out more and more. And so it's kind of just, it's that balancing act really. But obviously with AI and everything coming in, then it kind of changes. It makes you think maybe we should be focusing a bit more on getting more content out as well. It's just a balancing act, I think.
So how many of those 150 articles are then, I guess, affiliate or buyer intent articles?
It's pretty much 50-50 split. Like I don't have numbers in front of me, but yeah, it would definitely be, it would be pretty close to being 50-50.
Dude, you're making a shit ton just from like 75 by buyer intent style articles.
Yeah. It's just some articles, obviously, as what ends up happening is you just find there's certain articles which bring in a whole heap, and then there's others where they might not be doing anything or they might not be doing as much. What I've found as well, though, is that things like on Ahrefs, you know, everyone tries to reverse engineer other people's articles and things like that. And quite often it's the ones that don't even rank necessarily on Ahrefs or don't even show on there, which can do quite well. And they're just like hidden gems as well. It's a couple of things on that. I spoke to a guy in, I don't know if it's, if I'm allowed to say this, but like, it was on the Authority Hacker Pro group, which is really good. Mm-hmm. I don't know if, again, I'm not sure I'm allowed to say that, but they're, because it's sending people off to somewhere else. But I spoke to a guy in there, and just I find that the more that you can speak to people, the more like little hidden gems you can find and just little tricks and things like that. And he pretty much made me that within a few emails, just to a couple of affiliates, like I improved affiliate commissions. Like with one of them, it went from like 5% to 10% just with like three emails to an affiliate manager. And it's little things like that where when you're starting, that doesn't really make much difference. But once you've found an affiliate which is paying, you know, if it pays you 10 grand a year and you go from 5% to 10%, that's literally, you've just made 10 grand in three emails in a year. And like not many other things. And then obviously if you change the numbers to 50 grand a year, that's like 100 grand a year. So it's there can be huge things that you can do where you don't necessarily always think of when you're first starting and when you're first doing it. And it's probably not worth your time either, because why would an affiliate manager even listen to you if you haven't got any traffic and you're not sending them any money or anything? So, yeah, I mean, the tip, which I thought was really useful, and it's not 100% like really accurate. Like I wouldn't recommend doing this all over the place, but you kind of use affiliates off each other. So you can say another affiliate has basically said that they want to pay me for the top spot in this article, and it's made you this much money. And if you can show them, break it down and be like, this one article has made you this much money and someone else wants the top spot, but is there any way that we can negotiate your commission rate? And it's just an easy way to, you're not forcing them. You're not saying, I want a rise of this much. It's just like, it's a legit thing that often affiliates will do. They will come in, and like, I've had those kind of emails before from different people. So it's like, obviously if you've had the email, then it is 100% legit what you're doing. But if you haven't had the email, then it's a little bit, it can be a little bit shady, I guess, if you're just making stuff up. But it's it's an easy way to just at least start a conversation with someone. Sometimes they just say, we don't change it for anyone, sort of thing. And other times they just increase it without you even asking. So it's, or not asking, but without directly saying, bump it up to this or whatever. So
it's an easy revenue driver. Like something I'm now looking to try do, I've got a call this week with the company, is looking for at sponsorship as well on top. So I've already got the affiliate stuff in place and custom commissions, all that kind of stuff. And then now I'm going to talk about sponsorship to have them maybe sponsor my podcast and my YouTube and the website and all that, and almost like double down on that relationship to bring more monthly money, and that's stable because it's not dependent on, you know, conversions, et cetera, it's kind of like helpful for them because they get in front of eyes and then I get paid. And that's something I'm looking to try doing the sites.
100%. I definitely need to do more of that as well. There's a guy, I don't know if you've ever spoke to Kellen Klein, but mini mastermind and stuff with him before, and just still speak to him quite a lot, but he would be great to have on the podcast and speak about that. And I would love to listen to that.
Link us up.
In his brain, he's great with sponsored deals and things like that. And he's always saying you could definitely do more from that. And I just struggle to think of the exact way to like package it. Cause you know, like you say, it's, if you've got like a podcast and this and that, it's like, it's not as straightforward, it's not as black and white as like affiliate marketing, whereas someone clicks it and buys it, you've made the money, so it's clear. Whereas when it's like a podcast and you're advertising here and there, how do you track it, how do you know how much you're sending them? And it's hard to
that's the funny one. It's just trying to find almost like what the company is after with the sponsorship, like if they're after conversions and stuff, that's different, because obviously they can only pay so much based on conversion rate, traffic, et cetera, et cetera. But I guess through the affiliate stuff, you're kind of already doing that. So it's more like almost like awareness, like having them on the site for new eyes to come in and see their brand, or maybe you create some content for them as well. So it's almost like they can use your content on their social media, et cetera, et cetera. So it's almost like a UGC kind of deal. But I guess it's dependent on the company or what they're after. Maybe they've already got all that in place and they just want more eyeballs and more people seeing their brand associated with a brand that's trusted by people who are visiting your site. So that's hard to price though, for sure.
And it's like, how do you do it on a monthly basis, or is it a 6 month deal?
I think you'd have multiple packages. Idea would be like a 1 month, or you'd kind of be like maybe exclusive sponsor for like the whole year. I don't know, you know, I'm going to talk to them anyway this week and see what I come up with. But it's not an easy thing to do.
Yeah. It's those sort of things though. Once you get to a certain stage, that they're just needle movers rather than just always thinking about content and links, which most people just, that's all they ever think about. And it's little things like that where I've seen it time and time again with different people, you know, different people that you hear on the podcast, it's always thinking a little bit more outside the box. Like, obviously you need the content and links before you can even start doing these other stuff. So it's just, it's like catch 22, like, you know, you can't get one without the other. So it's, yeah, obviously unless you're doing something else like YouTube or social media marketing, yeah, things like that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, your affiliate articles are obviously working. So how are you writing those to convert so well? Like, what, I guess, how are they structured and what's going into them that's making them successful?
Yeah, it's a mad amount of time and process now as to what goes into each article. Like, when I first started, to be honest, even when I first started, I just already had like quite a clear vision of what I wanted the site to be and what it wanted to include. And so I just spent so much time on sort of 5-10 articles just to kickstart the site. And to be honest, they've all been redone. So not all of the work was basically a waste of time, if you think of it like that. But it's really what helped to just build a bit more trust, authority, and like all of them were just really like on point. You know, I just did just... the perfectionist in me just wanted to make sure they were all good. But, you know, at the same time, it's like you do just need to get them out there. So I probably started the site in end of 2020, and then I launched it in like maybe in October, November. And then I launched it with 10 articles on like January 1st, 2021. So that was always the plan, was like, let's just get 10 really good articles out there. And that's a little bit of a mix of, I'd say maybe about 7 of those were like roundup reviews, and then 3 of them were like ultimate guide type style things. But what that just did is it meant that if anyone came to the site, they've got some really good ultimate guide resources where you can send them to, which, you know, is really useful for pretty much anyone in the space. And then the roundup reviews were also not like other roundup reviews. That is in they spent a lot of time. I literally just put so many things in the spreadsheet. So if you see most people, when they try and write a roundup review, they'll just go to Amazon, pick 10 items, stick it in there in any order, and just regurgitate the same stuff on Amazon. I think most people now know not to do that. And like, there's other stuff you can do. But I was listening to the podcast that you did with Kevin as well the other day, and he's great. I've seen a lot of his stuff before and taken a lot of his advice and stuff on board. I can't remember if I'd seen it at that time or if it was a bit after, but like basically I would just create a spreadsheet with 50, 100 different products. And then I think as a user, and this is the other advantage as well, is that I am a user in this space. So I already know what the other reviews are doing and what they're missing and what I would like to see. So again, it's thinking outside the box. It's not just copying what everyone else is doing. It's like, you know, to a certain extent. And if you find some good reviews, then obviously you can use that and help to brainstorm and think of things for yourself. But that's how we kind of differentiated ourselves, is that it was really like analytical and thinking about what the customer is actually going to want. And so we'd break down like what specs I think was important, and then just spend I went on Fiverr and just found some guy that could go and scrape sales pages and put the information in. And then once that table's all done, which would literally take hours of work just to get like, just to think of the criteria, I'd make sure I do like 5 or 10 and record my process or something, and tell, so I could share what I wanted them to do. And even then you get some people that are just so bad, even though it's really basic. But like you end up finding one or two, and then you can just get them to do it again. And so kind of doing that. And we ended up with like a spreadsheet with just loads of different tabs and so much information in there. And then you can sort it by, you know, if it's hiking boots or something, then you can sort it by the thickness of the sole or something like that, and how big the heel is, and whatever people are looking for in hiking boots, you know, how tough it is and I don't know what their type of material and things like that. And then you can go through and give them like almost like a weighted ranking that you decide what's the most important thing. So is price the most, like if someone's searching for best budget hiking boots, then your price is probably going to be the most important weighting. Maybe the thickness of the sole is the next most important, and then how high the heel goes and things like that. So you almost decide what are the most important aspects, and then you can kind of create your own ranking system, your in-house, which is from your own research, and then you sort of use that in the reviews. And so it really helps to write the reviews as well, is because then rather than just guessing and regurgitating stuff you see on Amazon, you're like, this is actually the best hiking boot because it has the thickest soles, it's really comfy, you know, and you're going to be able to use this all day, and it's the best value out there. There is a higher end product, but for 99% of people, this is going to be more than enough, and it's going to save you $200 or whatever it is. So all of a sudden, your review, which you're trying to sell people on, is actually really helping people. And I think that's the key, is that if you make reviews that really help people and they're not just regurgitating the same stuff that everyone else is doing, then people stay on the page longer, they click your links more, they buy the products, and I'm fairly sure Google can recognize when people do that. So it rewards.
How many products then do you have on the roundup? Because you mentioned like 50 to 100 in a spreadsheet.
Yeah, it depends. It really depends. You know, there's some things where there's only 3 good ones on the market, so you just do 3. Again, you can kind of check in the SERPs and see what other people are doing, just to get a rough idea. But I think at the start, what I was always doing is I was seeing what I thought was like the average number on the SERPs, and then just trying to do a couple more. Like, that was my thinking.
Yeah.
If I do a couple more, it's better. But now it's actually almost just, we just don't even look. We don't look at what other people are doing. Obviously you can do research, finding out from other people, but it's more just however many we think is important. And it's, you know, you try and think, what are the different people that would be finding this? Is there someone that's going to be on a tight budget? Is there someone that's going to come here with unlimited money and they want to buy the best one that exists? Is there someone that wants the smallest one? Is there someone, you know, what are the things that people want? And then that's how we decide. But it can be 5, it can be 10. Try not to make it too many. I think one of my first ones was something like 21 or something ridiculous. And now that's been cut to about 11, but there's so many different people that want something in that space that it's hard to cut more than that. And but I mean, if you look at the tracking and things, people only click on the top 1, 2, or 3 mainly. Is and sometimes the last one, which is what I find is quite interesting. So the ones in the middle just kind of get lost. So it sort of makes you think, why did we even have these on that page? But yeah, maybe.
So how much detail goes into each product then in your roundup? Because obviously you see, as you mentioned, a lot of people just kind of take Amazon, 1 or 2 short paragraphs, and that's it. Product. But are you going into a lot of detailing? Because you mentioned you have a table full of like a lot of the stats or features of the
as a user of different things and someone that's gone onto different roundup reviews to actually buy something before, I just get frustrated if it's really thin content, and it's just like, why are you even doing this? It doesn't help me at all. I could have gone to Amazon and got this. But if it goes too much, then it also frustrates me because it's like, this is just overwhelming. So the kind of process that we have is that we go into like thorough detail with the top one. We always want to just try and make it really easy to be like, this is the best one for most people because XYZ, and then go into those details. And like, you can go into the more of the nuances with that top recommended product. And then the other ones, it is definitely much shorter because we don't want to just write stuff and just waffle on. And, you know, if you're saying every single product is the best product, it's really confusing for a user. Whereas if you just get to the point, you find what is its one key feature that differentiates it from the other products, and just kind of just keep honing in on that, then it's probably like, as a guess, again, I don't have exact guidelines for this just because the writers that do it now they know the process, they know what to expect and things like that. But I guess it's maybe like, if we say it's 400 words for the first one, then it would be maybe 200 for the rest or something like that, just as a rough guide off the top of my head. But that's not exact.
Gotcha.
It can be more, it can be less. And if there's only three products, then maybe you go into more detail about all of them because there's a reason there's only those three. But yeah.
How many writers do you have then? You mentioned writers there. Are they writing all the content on the site now? Or are you doing any of the writing?
Yeah, I haven't done any of the writing for quite a while now, but there's three main ones. Yeah. And there, I try and find people as well that are into the space as much as possible. I know it's not that easy. And some people argue getting a good writer is better than someone who's like a niche expert. But yeah, I find like this topic anyway is definitely, there's a lot of passionate people about it. And so, you know, if someone knows what they're talking about in this space, just from reading a little bit, whereas that might not be the case if you're doing light bulbs and, you know, like home decor and things like that. Maybe, I don't know, maybe it will, but yeah, it obviously depends on the niche.
So did you train them to write a certain style or a certain way that you have there? How did you go about that? Do you have standard operating procedure or SOPs as well?
Yeah, we've got, so I use Asana and kind of have all that. And there was a training process that everyone goes through at the start, but it's definitely, just so much of it goes into the hiring process. I just spend a long time with, you know, just trying to get as many applicants as possible and just trying to find as many as possible. And you always ask for written work that they've done before. In fact, one of them is kind of been like headhunted. Like I've actually found his work and was like, I really, you know, there's not many people that can produce this kind of stuff. So I really want you to write for the site. And then, you know, it's kind of a bit of a different negotiation when you're doing that. But yeah, definitely spending time and giving multiple writers a paid test. And I find giving them all the exact same keyword, the exact same topic is really important, because obviously you're not going to be able to use them all, but I have such high quality standards. Well, I think I do anyway. Maybe they've always changed. Like this time next year, I'll probably think my standards now are useless. But I have such high standards that I'm not going to just use someone on a test article and publish it on my site. Whereas I think some people will think, oh, if I'm getting five people to write an article, I may as well get them to do one article each and then I can publish them. And then a paid test actually is useful because I can use it as content. But I just think there's such a difference between high quality content and just mediocre that it's almost just not even worth publishing the media. Unless you're going down the AI route and doing tons and tons and tons, then the only way to really combat it and fight it is by just making stuff that's really good and better than other stuff that exists. That's my theory anyway, but where work is something else.
Is AI something that you're going to look to start to incorporate onto your site?
I use ChatGPT, as I'm sure most people do in the space, and just playing with it, figuring out what I can do with it. I think I made like a tool from it, you know, some sort of calculator or something. It's not used for anything yet, but I was just playing around with it and seeing what it can do. I use it a lot more for like emails and it's quite useful for sales copy, I find as well. Like if you're doing anything, if you need any copywriting stuff, you can just, I find if you write something as good as you can and then put it in and say, now write this pretty much exactly the same, but just add more power words and more emotion, or encourage people to want to do something. It just changes slight little bits. It's like, oh yeah, that sounds way better. and little things like that. But you can even put in, I know some people that put in whole SOPs and say, this is how I want it to be written, and take out passive sentences, replace them with active ones and things like that. And so there's definitely things that you can use it for. And I know some people doing some really good stuff with it, but it's just, again, one of those things where it's just the time thing. I haven't spent enough time figuring it out and figuring out how I want to use it for content as such. And because I've got writers doing most of it, then it's just not really the top priority right now.
Yeah, fair enough. Are you, so you're outsourcing the content. Are you also outsourcing the link building?
Yeah. So I've kind of was doing that mainly just kind of by myself with emails and just used in like Hunter to like scrape different sites for different keywords and things like that. And then just trying to figure out, keep tweaking the template that you use and just trying to, I think the key that I found with outreach and things like that is just trying to make yourself sound like a real human being, because then if you do get a real human being on the other end of it, they often can recognize that you're a real person. So little things like mentioning my wife or my kids, or if you've got pets, you know, just something where someone can resonate, even if it has nothing to do with the niche, you know, just or something like, you know, my wife always tells me I'm crazy because of this, you know, something like that. And just something where it stands out and you're not just writing, dear sir, please give me a link, you know, like, so little things like that I found have been quite useful. But yeah, I was doing it a lot myself. I've hired someone quite recently to handle the email outreach a bit more and the negotiation side, but I found it's really hard to hire someone for that. It's yeah, I think maybe you could like compartmentalize it a little bit more. But there's so many moving parts. Like you need someone that understands SEO, because they need to understand how they can negotiate. And if they don't understand SEO, so I actually hired someone who was just like a salesperson. He's not really an SEO kind of person at all, because I didn't want someone coming in with like bad habits. But in hindsight, I'm sort of like, maybe it would be better if you had someone with some, at least some basic knowledge, or, you know, really wants to learn more about it, then that might help. And he's been great, to be fair. He's picked it up really, really quick and keeps learning more and more about different SEO practices and things. But it's a hard one to teach. There's so many different moving parts. I think I created like 3 hours worth of training for it. he's watched five times or something, and, you know, just keeps going through things at different stages. But definitely think we could do that side a bit better. I tried a couple of agencies and stuff as well before, but they're normally just not very good in my experience.
Yeah, fair enough. And so how do you juggle all this then? Obviously you have a full-time job, the kids, the family. There's probably people listening to this as well who maybe looking to do what you're doing and make enough money with their websites to be able to go full-time. How have you managed to juggle the side? I mean, you've outsourced a lot of stuff, which has probably made it a little easier, but sounds like you outsourcing has just made it so you're making 3-hour courses for your contractors there. So how have you managed to juggle it?
Yeah, I would definitely say that's the key though, is it's very easy when you outsource something. It's very, very easy to let quality and standard slip. Really, really easy. And like, even when I'm actively trying not to, I notice it happen, and then I'm like, right, I need to check. There's a few things that I do. Like, I'll always have a weekly call with everyone that I hire. So just even if it's just 30 minutes, I book 30 minutes in for people. And then I'm like, if it gets to the end of 30 minutes, I've got another call. So I've got to go. So just so you know, straight away from the start, you've got this 30 minutes. Put things in order of priority before you come to the call, and then we can go through them like in order. And there's no, you might have a couple of minutes of, hey, how you doing? And you're just straight into it. Like, just get the main stuff done. I find that's been really helpful. But yeah, it's definitely the outsourcing side of things is just so important. And it's rather than, I think that's what I did differently in the previous two websites as well. I became busier and busier as the websites grew. One of them had like a podcast, and you know, I was just doing so, I had a Facebook group, and I think it was really good because I learned so many different skills, and I didn't have kids at the time as well, so that was lots more hours when you don't have kids. So I realized that though, I was just getting busier and busier as it was growing. So this one was always set, I think it helped starting with the good knowledge of where I wanted it to go, and a good idea of how I wanted to do it. And then it was just a case of, right, now can I find the right person for this? And now can I find the right person for this? Yeah, and a really good place to find people is jobrack.eu, I think. You can find like people quite often from Eastern European. And I found a couple of really helpful, like someone that does a lot of like the uploading content to WordPress. He now does prospecting, so he scrapes tons of different websites all the time. It just does a lot of like the admin-y type things, and he's just the perfect person. He's really analytical. He's just so good with attention to detail and things like that. But again, he didn't really necessarily know too much about all of this when he first started. It's just finding good people. I think that's the key. And yeah, again, going back to the, like the interview process, I think with everyone that I would... So I would just create like a Google form or something, and you can normally tell there's a few questions in there where I pretty much would only look at like one or two questions that I'd put in. After a while, I realized these are the two most important ones. So if it's a writer, it's obviously what's their previous work. Like you just check what their work is, and very quickly you can see if they're right to the kind of standards that you want or not. And then, so you just want to shortlist it and try and whittle them down to as few people as possible. And then ideally you're left with somewhere like 2 to 5 or something like that. And then jump on a call, 20-minute call with every single one of them. And I find that you learn so much more about someone in 20 minutes than you ever will by reading something or going through a Google form or something like that. But then again, once you've done that, you can very quickly be like, no, they're not going to be a good fit. They're not going to be a good fit. Or I want to give this person a paid test. And then just trying to give them a paid test of exactly what they're going to do. So again, if it's writing, give them an article.
Mm.
And again, try and give them all the same test, because then you can equally compare them against each other. And then once you've done that, depending on the role and depending on what it, you know, if it is a writer, I'd actually say this might not necessarily be required, because you just need them to write. But if it's someone that you need to work with quite a lot, you know, someone like a virtual assistant kind of position, or someone on the outreach side, or pretty much it may even be like, if it's going to be an important writer, then this might be useful. But doing like an hour to 3 hours potentially interview where you go through like all of their past experience, and I think if you read the book Who, it kind of goes into detail about all of this, but it's, I find getting that bit right has helped so much, because like the book is simply about like hiring A players rather than B or C players. And I've noticed the difference this time is that A players, when you hire someone that is an A player, like an actual A player, I've thought I've done it before, but it's not, you know, when you've got one, they actually improve the business. So sure, it takes like 30 minutes a week, and then I do like a quarterly call with everyone as well, just to get everyone on the same page and make sure everyone knows what's happening, and trying to be as transparent as possible. But when you get an A player, they actually improve your processes. So rather than you having to chase people all the time and get them to redo things because they haven't done it properly, not only do they do it properly, but they actually improve things. And that's kind of what's happened with the website, is that, you know, there's 2 or 3 key people that are not me that have actually improved the website and improved the standards significantly from when I first started it. So again, you just don't know what you don't know. And like other people come in with different experiences and different ideas and things like that. And you don't have to take everything, but you can definitely pick and choose and just slowly make small improvements. So yeah, outsourcing is key. But again, obviously you just need to hustle at the start. There's no other way to do it. You've got to put in the time and just being consistent with it, really. You know, like even just 30 minutes a day is so much more, I find it so much better than trying to do 6 hours at the weekend and then not thinking about it till next weekend, because you just forget what you're doing. And it's amazing how many little random moments in the day you actually do get to do something once you're in the flow of doing something. So if I get stopped halfway through doing something, I know that if I get 30 minutes later, I can finish that and it's super productive. Whereas if I don't know what I'm doing. Like if it was 3 days ago, I was doing something. I'm like, I don't know. I've got 30 minutes now, but I don't know what to do. So you just don't do anything. And I've definitely done both of those. I'm not saying I'm perfect and I do it all the time, but there's multiple times where I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. I've got 30 minutes.
I'm just, that 30 minutes is finding out what you got to do.
Yeah, I might go for a nap. I get some sleep or something, but yeah.
So what's your day-to-day then on the site? What are you doing day-to-day on the site then? Because it sounds like you've got most things outsourced already.
Yeah, I kind of missed a part of the story as well. I did take 2 years off work, so that really helped. This was when I had the other websites, though. I think I started this one towards the end of when I was going back to work. But I'm a PE teacher, and I actually do quite like my job. So I know a lot of people don't like their job and they want to get out of it. But I did actually miss it. COVID happened. It's boring not seeing people. And so, you know, I just quite wanted to go back into it. And at that stage, like the other two sites weren't doing like amazing or anything like that. So it just kind of made sense for me to go back into teaching for kind of, doing it for the last few years again. And yeah, it was just kind of that definitely helped. But I have a loving, supportive wife who was more than happy to, like, she was still going to work and we could live off her salary. And so we're not like extravagant people who need to go and spend loads of money all the time. So our lifestyle, and obviously my wife, gave us that opportunity for me to be able to do that. But in those 2 years, I learned so much, and like it's definitely not to be overlooked. Like if you've got a chance to go and like do something, even if it's just 1 year, if you can just do it for a year and you think you're going to be able to go and get a job again, then it's not always the worst idea. But obviously you need to be speaking to your significant other, whoever it is. Like you can't
don't just listen to Mike on the podcast, yeah, and then quit your
just
job.
Say, hey, Mike said I should quit my job for a year. You need to think about it. And so you know, think, can you live, like if you don't make another penny for a year, could you still survive, you know? And so having some sort of savings or whatever it is. I know it's much easier said than done, especially if you have got kids. And in fact, I don't think it would have been possible for me to have done this if I had not have done this before kids. So I say that, but it probably is possible. It's just your mindset and like what, like, you know, how you think about things is how important is this for you? Do you think it's actually realistic that you're going to make it full time with it? So yeah, that definitely helped. But yeah,
nice. So, and obviously you're going back into the site full time. What's the growth levers you're looking to pull now to get this thing cranking again?
Yeah, definitely want to get into some YouTube. Like I've always kind of quite liked that anyway. I quite liked the creative side of things, but I know there's still so much more to learn on that side of things. It's like a whole other. It's almost like a whole other business model in itself. It can be like YouTube obviously can just be its own business model. But and with that, just creating our own products, it's just figuring out like what do people actually want, like what are people actually willing to pay for, and just trying to create a community out of it. And so the whole nice. Facebook group and potential other social media channels. But what I have learned as well, and that's actually something that's been really important last few years, is just focusing on one thing at a time. So I just dropped everything. I stopped doing all other side hustles, all other projects, all other everything else, and my only focus was SEO. I was like, if I can master SEO with this site and just get that ranking, then once you start building up an income, then you can use that to reinvest, hire people, try and outsource the SEO side of things as much as possible, and then move on to the next thing. So yeah, I'd probably say once we move back, that next thing probably would just be YouTube. Like that's going to be like my one focus is YouTube, figuring that out and figuring out how to stand out and not just be copying everyone else in the space, because I think that's the key. You've got to use ideas from other people, but figure out what can you do differently? What value can you add that is different to that's out there? And I think that's the way that you can just again, I'm just saying this from seeing what other people have done. Like if you look at anyone else that's successful in any space, they always have something slightly different to the way that other people do it. You won't see people that just copy people consistently over time and make it super successfully. Like that just doesn't happen. So it's figuring out what
are you planning to be the face of that channel?
Yeah, I think so. Like, because I just don't know how you can outsource it and have someone that gives it the dedication that it needs. Maybe at some stage it can be outsourced as well. And I've learned that a bit from Spencer from the Niche Pursuits. Like I've seen the way that he's kind of done that, you know, with the podcast and things like that. I guess even Niche Website Builders.
Yeah, even Niche Website Builders.
Exactly. So it's definitely possible that just because you're doing it at the start, it doesn't mean that you always have to do it. And people still will follow along. Like, I think that's what everyone's worry is that everyone's following me, but it doesn't have to be. You can create it like a brand and it can still have the same core, you know, things that make it stand out. Even if someone else is doing it, it doesn't have to just always be you. But yeah, I think initially it will be me. I just quite like the idea of it anyway. I know some people are like totally put off by video, but yeah, no, I'm up for that, I think.
Nice. Yeah, I gotta film a YouTube video after this. I gotta obviously missed a week and a bit with COVID and stuff, but gotta get back on the wagon and get that momentum going again to bloody film video. That's so much easier to sit down and write. Yeah. You don't have to set anything up. You don't have to like stand there and talk and then have to edit it and this and that and have a quiet house or whatever it is to be able to do it. Like such a big barrier.
I didn't realize like how much time goes into YouTube videos. You know, you binge watch like 2 hours of YouTube videos, jumping from channel to channel and just watching it and like, yeah, this is good. And then only now that I'm like, oh my God, like these guys, you know, like 10 minute YouTube videos probably taken 5 hours to produce or something ridiculous or like probably more or a lot of them. So it's crazy how much time goes into it.
What kind of content are you looking to create? Are you going to do like review style content too to match your stuff?
What's his name? Kevin Espiritu, you know, the garden guy. I like his idea, like his sort of philosophy with it is that you build one channel. So if it's SEO, you build that and then you use your SEO to then help build another channel. So you figure out what articles are ranking, what are bringing in traffic, create a video for that article. You've already got the content, but obviously you've got to think of how you can make the video interesting. You can't just sit there and read it, like, but different ways that you could definitely do it. I'm half thinking as well of maybe starting a podcast. Like, I've done a podcast before, maybe starting a podcast with it. And I was thinking I could even like chat to some of my writers or something and then repurpose that to make it like a YouTube, you know, if you have a chat with someone about a review that they've done, then they're going to have way more knowledge than me because they've done the review and they've done the research and things like that. So that's a little idea that I've got. But yeah, I think there's Pat Flynn. He started doing like a Pokemon channel.
Yeah, I saw that.
Seen that? Like that.
I haven't seen the channel, but I saw that he's doing.
They have no interest in Pokemon at all. I think watching like an hour's worth of his channel because it is amazing. Like the way that he does it is so good. Like if you have any interest of getting into YouTube, the way that he does storytelling and I love the style. Like, and I'm sort of thinking I might try and sort of take that style a little bit and use that. You know, like challenges or something like that, 24-hour challenge, like, you know, do this to that or something in 24 hours. I think he was sort of saying something like, I've got to complete this set. I don't know what the set is or like how it's to do, but I've got
but you watched it.
Yeah, got to complete this set in 24 hours. And apparently it's really hard to do. And so he's like flying around town and like messaging people on Facebook and trying to like make trades and trying to get all these cards and stuff. And I think if he doesn't do the set, then he has to give it all to his son or something. Like, so he's going to, you know, there's a there's actual reason behind it. Like if he doesn't complete it, there's something that happens. So I quite like that idea. I'm trying to think about how I can use that sort of concept. But yeah, I think he talked about like having three or four buckets or two or three buckets, whatever, for your channel. So not all your videos are going to be exactly the same, but you're probably going to find, and again, you're probably not going to know until you actually start and see what people actually resonate with and want to watch, and then try and choose two or three different avenues that you're going to go down. So that's my loose plan with YouTube. Anyway, what about you? I know you're doing a lot of YouTube.
Yeah. I was trying to pump out three videos a week. This week will only be two. Just doing, but yeah, it's like one, it's one, well, technically it's four if you count the live stream, but it's one podcast. And then typically if I'm doing a podcast, I'll stream it live as well and then take it off after. And then I'll do like two other videos, which would be like informational technique or like sometimes review stuff. If I'm like really cannot be bothered trying to put videos together, I'll do like a one take, basically review style article of like best, whatever it is I've done before that I have sitting around. And I'll do like a review like video like that because it's easy. Mm. And that's pretty much what I've been doing, just trying to pump the shit out of it. But man, it's such a grind. It's such a grind doing YouTube.
Yeah. It's just totally different, isn't it? It's totally different.
Yeah.
But I can see
that. And most people have like the setups, you know?
Sorry.
Like the big YouTubers, they have the setups, like they have like multiple good cameras and the lights, and then they can change, they have editors that change the angles to look good. I literally just do it on my phone with the microphone, and it's like one angle.
Yeah.
And I just do no editing. So there's no zooming, nothing. It's like probably boring as for people to watch, but people watch it. It does all right. So I'm just like, I'm just going to do that for now until I can afford an editor or something.
Yeah. Again, that's something that I've learned as well, is that you just start with whatever you've got. You don't, you know, like our processes and stuff that we have with our content now was nothing like that when we first started, but just whatever you can do, just do that. And then you can change it. Like it's not like, I think people get fixated with content, like as in that's it for the rest of your life. And a website is definitely not like that, because you can literally just change an article straight away. But obviously with YouTube, it does exist, but it's not like people will, you know, if in 5 years' time you've been doing two videos a week for 5 years, no one's going to go back and watch the YouTube videos that you've done now, you know, unless they've taken off and like you get millions of views or whatever and they come up at the top of your popular feed or something like that. But I think people get too fixated on this has to be just perfect, but it's just getting the momentum and the habit and stuff like that is far more important, particularly in the early days.
Yeah, for sure. Now, this has been a great chat, Mike, and some insightful things for hopefully the listeners can take as they go full-time or are full-time on their sites. But where can people follow you and see what you're doing and learn more?
Good question. the site that I used to have was, well, it still exists, is Make Time Online. And so I had like a podcast and stuff like that. I don't even know what my Twitter handle is. Maybe, yeah, I've got one, Make Time Online. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. I hardly use Twitter. Online. But Facebook's the best place. Like if you find me on Facebook, that's just because I'm in some different groups, things like that. And I want to be growing my own group and community and stuff this year. So that's where I'm probably going to, social media wise, that's where I spend most of my time. I've just removed Instagram. Again, I found that's the best idea, is remove anything that's just a distraction, just get rid of it. So Twitter, Instagram doesn't exist on my phone anymore, but Facebook does. So that's the best place.
Nice. Perfect. And we'll link that up in the description for anyone listening, but thanks for coming on, Mike. Appreciate it.
Cheers, James.
Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you're listening. Until the next episode, goodbye.